The following presentation is brought to you by Rita, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyard. All material is copyrighted by Layla Rudyard Hill. If you'd like to learn more about Rita or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com. We hope you enjoy the following presentation of Transpersonal Astrology Part 2. This talk is 46 minutes long.
In which the trans-Saturnian planet, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, and perhaps other planets, are located. Now, why I say the solar system stops at Saturn? That is the whole tradition. That is the thing that as physical beings looking through our eyes, we are able to see. Therefore, it is our physical universe. As long as we are physical beings, as long that same principle of physicality expand is limited by the distance of Saturn, which conveniently has those beautiful rings around itself and therefore become a very pregnant, significant symbol of limitation and focusing, concentration, concretization and so on. But just as the solar system is, just as a personality is limited to a certain sphere, as it were, by the structure of his body and psychologically by the structure of his ego, which is also a Saturnian factor, that which limits him, that which makes him a particular person born in a particular place with a particular culture, with a particular society, a particular place in that society and as a particular person, which you usually think of itself as exclusively what he is. I am myself, different from everybody else, single, master of my destiny and all that kind of thing, you see. But and essentially unrelated with everybody else. That is the Saturnian principle. But just as that is something that can be transcended, just as the whole principle of the solar system as an exclusive limiting thing can be transcended, when you realize that the sun, which is the center of that system, is also merely a little star, tiny little star, one of billions of stars in the galaxy as a whole. That was why the title of my book, The Sun is Also a Star. If you realize that you, is only a little star within the totality of mankind, then suddenly your ego sees itself in an entirely different way. Sure, it is necessary to control certain factors, to adjust to certain conditions in your society, to know how to do certain things that are necessarily done in terms of ordinary everyday life. Fine. But essentially you are a star. You are one, a monad if you want, in the great whole of mankind. And of course the whole tradition of ancient occultism is that to every monad there is a star of the galaxy which corresponds to it. That Blavatsky referred to it as every adept knows his father's star in the heaven at the initiation. That is to say, at that initiation he begins to realize that he's no longer only a person, but he is really one component of a great larger unit, which you might call, if you want, the White Lodge, and so on. Now, the whole point astrologically there in that idea of transpersonal astrology is that the planet Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, which are beyond the sphere of Saturn, are the planet of transformation. They are the planet which enable us, or tell us rather, how best we can transform ourselves according to the time and the place we are born. If you see them in your chart, they are placed in a way, in the house particularly, which tell you what kind of activities are more susceptible of being used for that process of transformation, how best you can use them, the best time at which they can operate in your life, so that you don't need to rush ahead into transforming yourself, but perhaps the great crisis of transformation is a couple of years ahead, and you better prepare yourself to it rather than to rush into something which you wouldn't be able to do at a particular time. Or if something happened in the past, a crisis happened in the past, and perhaps which seemed to have shown you certain things, but you missed the opportunity, and your inertia of your ego or your family pattern and all that stopped you from taking that opportunity, then you can understand back what happened exactly, why it happened at that time, what were the forces which were fighting against the process of transformation, and we can see that perhaps some similar occasion, opportunity will arise, and how you can best prepare for it, and so that you can see all the elements of your life and your personality in relation to that process of transformation. So that in that transpersonal kind of astrology, the chart and particularly the motions of Uranus, Neptune and Pluto are become indication of how you can transform yourself, what are the best time, the best condition, the best mode of activity which will enable you to transform yourself, to recognize the crisis of transformation when they come, to recognize the meaning it has, how long it will last to some extent, so that you don't get impatient if the thing is shown to last three or 4 years, and so that you know that you have to have patience to go through that thing and all that, but during that period there will be high points which you can take advantage of to stop losing your patience and get a larger perspective on what is happening. All those things can be indicated symbolically. It's a language. Astrology is a symbolical language. It's a message of the sky, and you have to decipher that message, and the planet Uranus, Neptune and Pluto give you the key to the message as to how, when and why you should transform yourself and in relation to what. Now, those are highly important things, and it is significant that it is during the last three centuries that Uranus, Neptune and Pluto were discovered. They were there, of course, but mankind publicly as a whole was not ready to make use of them, because the great crisis of transformation, of collective crisis of transformation, planetary crisis of transformation, were not yet possible in a conscious and directed way. So that those planets were seen because we had developed faculties which were superphysical. Our mind, the mind of abstraction, the scientific mind, the mind of calculus, algebra, even the inventiveness of the mind which is able to see light and deal with light through telescope and lenses and calculation of group algebra and so on. That kind of mind is not the physical mind. It is not bound to the biological sphere of mankind. It is not bound to man as a member of the human kingdom, which is the top of the animal kingdom. It is not biological mind, it is an archetypal mind which deals with principle, you see. And it is because that mind began to develop that we were able to develop the capacity to see those planets Uranus and Neptune. But unfortunately, it is impossible for that kind of mind to develop at first, in its highest form, it has to start through an analytical process to an intellect which analyzes things away, which deal with very particular factors, which try to cut things down so that you can understand how it ticks and all that. And so you have all our scientific empirical type of knowledge, analytical type of knowledge, which enable us to learn something about the laws of nature, which is fine. The unfortunate thing is that that type of mind carry with it emotional ego implication, which almost inevitably make it to be used for destructive purpose. And therefore, we have had an industrial revolution, electronic revolution, and all those scientific revolution and all that, which, wonderful as they have been in a material sense, nevertheless, because they were completely based on that type of intellect which is intimately associated with the ego pattern, the I, exclusivistic ego pattern, has been used by the glorification of the ego, whether it is a personal ego or the national ego, and therefore we have the horrible mess in which we are at the present time. So that what modern science has done, really, the great value, if you want to put it that way, of modern science and the modern intellect, is to have provided mankind with the opportunity to experience any number of crises, which in turn gave to individuals living in that society their own personal opportunity to transform themselves and to change the frame of reference from the Saturnian ego frame of reference to the galactic, transpersonal, all-human frame of reference. Those of you who have read the Mahatma letter or some of the books on Theosophy of Blavatsky and so on, see how much it has been stressed in some of the Mahatma letter, that stressing that we are not interested in anyone except that they work for humanity as a whole, what he called humanity the great orphan. And the one absolute requirement to become a true theosophist, to become one of our disciples, he said, is to work absolutely and totally for the welfare of mankind. That means that we have to change our frame of reference. And what we call the path of initiation, is merely the process by means of which we are able to change our frame of reference from the little planetary frame of reference symbol of the ego to the great frame of reference of the galactic consciousness symbol of mankind, and mankind in a spiritual sense, which is what we call the White Lodge. So that, you see, with those discovery of those planets, what we have simply is new words in the language of the universe, words which enable us to change our mind, to metanoia, the transformation of the mind, you see, which is what Theosophy was meant to accomplish, as Blavatsky stressed again and again. The purpose of Theosophy is to change the mind of the 20th century, and changing the mind in the sense of really transforming it so as to refer it to a larger field of reference. And in a sense, that's what some of the modern science of physics and all that is beginning to do, and some of the paraphysics, parapsychology and all that are trying to do hesitantly, and it is to establish a new frame of reference, to dismaterialize the objects and as well as our bodies. This is no longer a solid subject. solid object. It is an empty space with whirling electrons at terrific speed, the speed of light. There is nothing on that chair. I'm sitting on empty space, and I'm myself empty space, in which millions or billions of electrons are whirling at terrific speed. My words are expression of the speed of whirling millions of electrons, which are touching in your brain, millions of electrons also whirling at the same speed. You see, it's another world, it's a world of forces. And how can we reach that world of forces? Through crisis, which means through taking decision. Crisis means the opportunity to crinal, to decide, to change our frame of reference. And it is only through that change of frame of reference that you can accomplish what you call very sometimes hesitantly and with little understanding our spiritualization, or leading to what we dream of with very little understanding of initiation. It is a complete change of reference, and what astrology, transpersonal astrology can do, and many other things can do it also, of course, but it has a very important factor. It can be an important factor for some people, at least, because it is based on something which also involved the whole of humanity. The experience of the sky, the experience of the order of the sky, the night sky, in relation to the chaos of the dark forest at night, is an experience which is all human experience. Every human being, up to recently when you live in cities, has experienced it. It is the most fundamental experience, perhaps, of human beings. So in that sense, using that experience as the foundation for a symbolical language, for a set of messages which enable us to discover in ourselves the possibility to also celestialize ourselves, disegoize ourselves. That possibility of that language is an extremely valid and valuable opportunity. And so, but you see, unless you use it in that way, at least to try to make yourself whole, and then having made yourself to some extent whole and understanding, try to see what this whole can do to become more whole, to become a part of a larger whole. Unless you do that, astrology is of very little use indeed, and can do more harm than good. But that applies to lots of things. Psychology can do more harm than good, because it's also so much concerned with analysis, with description of phenomena, which are not interesting in themselves. But what is matter is what you can do with it, how it can train your mind to think in larger terms of the human psyche, and then apply it, use it for psychotherapy, for making yourself whole, for a wholing process. But that wholing process, again, I repeat, has no meaning unless it is a means to an end. And the end is to become a greater human being, to become more than man. And so, may perhaps those of you who are interested in astrology try to see in your interest a little means to a much greater end, which is to become part of the wholeness of mankind. I thank you.
So at this time then, we will entertain questions to Dane Rudyard. I ask that you keep your questions short, please, that you make them relevant to the subject of the evening, and that they be in the form of a question instead of a comment. Yes, ma'am. And once also stand up, would you please, so everybody can hear your question.
I may have to ask you to interpret it.
Yes, go ahead.
How, Mr. Rudyard, does one use his own individual will to harness the energy of these higher octave planets such as Uranus and Pluto, and Neptune, for what you call transpersonal astrology.
You mean how to harness those wheels?
How to use your individual will to harness the energy of the entire planet for transpersonal growth.
Well, you see, from my point of view, it is not so much a matter of energy. It's those planets, Rasa, are like a clock. The clock doesn't generate any energy. It tells you what time it is. And what astrology does, essentially, is to tell you what time it is for this or that change to take place and how best you can do it. And in relation to what? I don't think so much it is a matter of harnessing energy, because when you begin to speak of that, you get into all sorts of problems as to how we can be, how can energy for a planet as far as small planet like Pluto do something to you, and so on. It is a very complicated and a very difficult subject. I don't say that there is no energy operating, but it's actually more the fact that the whole solar system is a magnetic field, as it were, and the fact that the planets are all moving around it, inside that field, generate a tremendous amount of currents and cross currents and so on, and those things occur to some extent which affect the whole planet, but they affect the planet and the humanity as a whole. As an individual person, your task is to what to do with those things, what happened, you see, how best you can do it. And it is not so much a matter of will, it's a matter of understanding. Now, if you understand something, and then the inertia of your passions or your attachment to your family or your nation or your religion or whatever it is, those attachments fight against your understanding that the time has come for a change. Then, you see, you can use your will to try to overcome, to give power to that understanding and overcome the inertia of the past. Will is something that you apply in order to counteract dharma, to counteract the obstacle to the fulfillment of your dharma. If you understand that something is blocking your path, you use your will to try to unblock it, you see. But it is not a matter of energy from any other something external. It's just simply that through understanding, you realize that there is something in you that stands in the way. And as you are the whole thing, you are much more than the obstacle, you try to use the energies of that is within you to remove that obstacle.
Yes, sir.
Well, I can tell your opinion. What do you think is significant for humanity, in my opinion, when all the planets align themselves in 1986?
Did you hear the question?
No, not too well.
What is the significance? What will the significance to humanity be when all the planets align themselves in 1986?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I don't know anything about it, and I'm afraid nobody else does. I mean, at least unless they are maybe great adepts or something. But I don't know that it is so particularly extraordinary. I mean, I am very curious, very leery of things which are extraordinary. I remember very well in 1962, they were for a day or two, seven planets in Aquarius, and some European astrologer raised a terrific commotion by saying, this is something extraordinary, it happened only doesn't happen since the fall of Rome or something like that, and something tremendous is going to happen, beginning of the Aquarian age and so on. And it looks to me very strange when I read it for the first time. I look at my ephemeris carefully, and I found that there were seven planets in Sagittarius in 1899. There were seven planets in Taurus in 1882. There were seven planets in Virgo, I think, in 73 or 74, whatever it is. and there will be seven planets in Taurus in the year 2000. Those are not extraordinary things. I mean, and so I don't know that it is so extraordinary to have the planet aligned in that way. If it does anything, it might generate certain stress in the solar rhythm, which may possibly increase certain outpouring bursts of solar energy, which may change the weather, the changing, which may, it could of course possibly create a telluric effect, cause earthquake. I mean, anything can cause earthquake. I mean, so, I mean, why worry about it?
Yes, ma'am.
In a wide configuration in the chart involving one of the three planets that you mentioned previously, very quickly, what would be the steps in starting to intrude with that wide configuration?
What is what?
A wide configuration, Yod, finger God.
Oh, well, let's not go into technical astrological things, please. I mean, this is one of those things which have been made a great deal of fuss about, and I don't know, nobody ever heard of it until very recently, and somebody discovered it and it sounds very attractive, and everybody suddenly jumped on the bandwagon, and suddenly it's very fashionable to speak of the Yod and so on. It's just a case of a triangle. There are three planets which are in certain group. If they are at 120 degrees apart, you have a trine. If they are 60 degrees there and 150 here, then you have another kind of triangle which you call a Yod. I don't see what is particularly exciting about it, except that there is a tendency for, when you have the Y like this, you see like that, there is a tendency for the point which is opposed to the bottom there to be strongly activated. But, I mean, lots of things happen. This is not important, you see. This is the thing that you have to try to understand is the meaning of what is happening and what you can do with it. Try to avoid all those interesting superficial things in astrology.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
What is time for them to do?
What is time for?
When it is time for a person to do what their chart calls for, can that person become physically ill if he or she doesn't do it?
Well, you know, I think in a certain way, they used to say, and I believe firmly, that the sin of omissions are worse than the sin of commissions. In the ancient, in occult cosmology or the development of mankind, Blavatsky stressed the fact that the origin of evil in mankind was when the spiritual being who were meant to incarnate at a certain time look down from the spiritual realm into the very crude animal form which men were at the time and look at them and said, what? Going down into that? You know, and said, we are gods, we can choose, and so they remained and they didn't do anything. But the worst thing happened was that those forms became worse and worse, became mated with animals and all that monster were created, and then finally, when they really had to come down, because or else the whole thing might have exploded, then of course the condition was far worse than if they had incarnated in the first place. So that is the thing that we very often do in our life. There are certain things that we could do a certain time. We didn't do it for one reason or another. There is nothing tragic about it, perhaps. But it means that sometimes it will be a little harder to do it the next time. But if you understand it, if you understand what happened, why it happened, what stopped you from doing certain thing, then next time you will have a better chance. And you must not be in a hurry. There is time. There is all sorts of time. If you do it in this life, you do it in another life.
Well,
Yes, sir.
Well, recently I read in Time magazine that they have found rings around Uranus. Now, of course, we all have heard about the rings around Saturn and what influences these rings, or what interpretation we can get from the rings of Saturn. What interpretation would you put on the rings of Uranus, if any?
Well, I am very skeptical about the discovery of astronomy because they change every 5 years. And I am not at all sure that what they interpret as ring around Uranus is necessarily the same thing at all as what there is around Saturn. It is so nice for somebody to see something and immediately jump at certain conclusion. I mean, the change that have taken, that have occurred in the picture of the universe in the last 50 years are tremendous, you see. Now, I don't know exactly what it can be until there is far more knowledge about it. I certainly wouldn't want to comment on it. Now, it may interest you to know that from my point of view, Uranus and Saturn are the two great enemies. In other words, Saturn is a principle of consolidation, inertia, focusing, and so on, and therefore the symbol of the ring, which are complex and visible, and have a very obvious significance, and so on. But Uranus might have another kind of rings, which may also perhaps mean that at a certain time we have reached a certain condition where we are able to see that Uranus' force has also to be a very concentrated force in order to operate. Maybe it's the ring of Saturn which have been taken on by Uranus in order to be destroy Saturn, who knows?
Yes, sir.
As we've discovered certain planets like Uranus, and we went to Neptune and Pluto, it seems to be they're like certain facilities in man, or like for instance electronics, electricity, and then medicinal purposes and atomic energy. The discovery of a new planet, will that bring up along the chakras, for instance, like moving into the heart chakra then? Will it be more of like an evolution of the heart feeling, or a feeling of goodwill towards man, do you think, the discovery of a new planet?
I think it is somewhat dangerous to try to identify the planets and the chakras. We do not know enough about chakras, and certainly don't know too much about what planets there are in the solar system. Now, don't forget that according to any occult books that mean anything at all, the chakras are not physical. They are center of etheric energy, or whatever you want to call it, pranic energy or whatnot. So that if you want to make a comparison, it may be that they refer to planets which are not visible. Whether the planets which are visible physically should be connected with chakra is entirely questionable. And if you find some parallelism in some old Hindu books and all that, you have to be very careful, because the Hindu books are very symbolical, and they take constantly purely material thing as symbol of transcendent processes, just like even the concept of Atman being merely breath. I mean, Atman at first originally meant the breath. So chakras, we don't know really what they are in relation to the solar system. I think Blavatsky says in the Secret Doctrine that there are 50 planets, or I don't know, I forgot exactly the number, of 70 planets in the solar system, and we see only about, well, at best 9-10. She speaks also, and many occultists have spoken of the fact that there are 7 sacred planets, but the Earth is not a sacred planet, and and Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto are not sacred planet either, and nobody knows exactly what a sacred planet is. So it's very difficult to make those correspondences there. It's so, you see, the danger about all those occult things, so-called, it is so easy to make correspondences. You have certain books from some occultist who is very popular today, written lots of books, and everything is made to correspond to everything else. And you get horribly and totally confused. From the point of view of a master who had a vision of the whole thing, those correspondences might be real, but they probably don't deal with the kind of level of consciousness in which we are operating at the present time. So be careful of all those correspondences. It's so intellectually exciting to make correspondences. You feel so clever if you have made all correspondences. You think you have understood everything. In fact, you have understood very little. That's my feeling. I mean, don't take it if you don't feel like it.
We'll take one more question. Yes?
Yeah, I'm sort of confused at this point.
How many? Oh, you are not the only one, I'm sure.
In a particular way, though, and maybe you could...
Well, everybody's way is particular.
Your opinion. In a certain respect, I see in astrology that to get some meaning out of it, that it is preferable to look at the planets and their positions in the heavens as actual physical entities. And then from another totally different perspective, to look at the planets and their position in the heavens simply as symbols, abstract, almost like equations. For instance, to draw up a chart, the ephemeris is the numeral that you plug into the equations you are given. And from my experiences of symbols and actual physical entities, they're separate. And that to pick one or the other, actually, you can't really seem to pick both. At least I haven't been able to. How do you see then astrology? More of a symbolization or actually a physical, real entity or whatever?
Well, but you see, you don't seem to understand what a symbol is. A symbol is a fact through which you see a meaning which extend far greater than that fact extend. But you cannot have a symbol unless you have a fact as the foundation for that symbol. So you cannot separate a fact from a symbol. You cannot separate the symbol of the cross, at least in our Western consciousness, unless you think of a crucified Savior which was on it. You cannot separate the concept of posing for meditation of the sitting Buddha unless you think of the Buddha as the perfection of the meditative process of transcendence of the physical earth and so on. So that any symbol is merely the foundation to which you attribute a meaning which far transcends your personal experience of that fact, because it enables you to communicate with every human being who has seen that fact a certain meaning, you see. Any word is a meaning. I mean, any word is a symbol. When you speak of a word, for instance, suppose that you are in a primitive situation, and somebody occasionally deal with tiger, and somebody has been killed by a tiger, a child has been eaten up by a tiger, and they begin to try to communicate to the rest of the tribe the fact that the tiger is a certain sound, whatever it is, you see, and you have a word which is tiger, let us say. And so what happened is that word becomes a symbol of the fact there is danger, a certain creature which actually can kill and all that. And so the idea, the advantage of having such a word is that if somebody sees a tiger in the distance, he yells tiger, and immediately all the men of the tribe come together with the spear, and all together they can kill the tiger, you see. So the word is the symbol which helps human beings to communicate together and to act in concert, you see. So the experience of the sky is an experience which can be used as the symbol of the capacity for human being to emerge out of the stage of the jungle chaos into the stage of the tremendous order of the universe, you see. And so in a sense the planets are facts, but in another sense they are symbol of a much larger possibilities. And astrology is a language of symbol which enables you, knowing how those facts are correlated in relation to your life, to able to communicate to you certain message. This is the way you can best do this, because Mars is in your sixth house. Your best way for you is to serve people. It may be the best way for you to get ill, because that is only through that experience that you will reach your dharma and so on, you see. So in a certain sense they are symbols. Now the fact they are abstract in ephemeris numbers and all that is just merely that the technique of the thing, you know, which enable you to calculate that. It's your intellect which is able to give you a measure of things. But you have to, you measure that order of the universe through your mind, and therefore you have the result of that measurement as a series of numbers. But the essential thing is the relationship between those facts which produce certain pattern in the sky, and you realize that those patterns in the sky are the responding to you, or you are responding to them. If you are born at a full moon, for instance, each time that you see a full moon, you might say, ah, that was the same situation I was born into. So you have your, what I call the lunation birthday, you know. And so you get a sense of measurement. It helps you to measure certain processes that take place in you. So it's a clock, it's a symbol in a way, but it's based on an actual experience. Yes?
Just one more point. I agree with what you're saying. I think I understand what you're saying, but I ran into a conflict with this just recently, where I don't have the exact date with me, but I could get it. And this was confirmed by a friend of mine who was an astrologer. I'm interested in astronomy also.
Yeah.
And I noticed it was during the month of March, a beautiful conjunction between Jupiter and the moon. Yeah. It was poetry to me. You watch the moon during the evening to dance with Jupiter across the sky. And within my knowledge of astronomy, this was a conjunction of about 5 degrees. Well, this was not indicated at all in any ephemeris that I could find. And it occurred to me, and also talking with a friend of mine who's interested in astrology, that there has become such a gap between astronomy and astrology that astrologers are failing to look at the sky anymore. And that, therefore, I'm beginning to find, who do I look for as a person to study who will be aware of these kinds of things and who can give me some kind of information with the fact that the ephemeris didn't seem to jive at that point.
Well, look, this is, of course, because you have to have a simple frame of reference. What the ephemeris give you is the longitude of the planet. And in certain cases, because of the declination or latitude and whatnot, the conjunction which occurred in the sky occurred perhaps several days before or several days after in terms of the longitude of those two celestial points. But it occurred anyway, you see. And so that is, again, is your frame of reference. When you will have an astrology which is three-dimensional, as I, in one of my book, what was it, Astrological Houses, I spoke of a three-dimensional astrology, so that instead of speaking of our birth chart, you will speak of your birth globe. You see yourself in the center and the globe and the planet there, then you will have a much better, more realistic picture of what is happening in the sky. And I agree with you that it is too bad in many cases that astrologers do not pay attention to the sky anymore, whereas they did in the past, of course. But then the question is this: how many people who live in the cities have ever a chance of seeing the sky? You see. And yet the majority of the people in the Western world are living in cities. So we are dealing with the majority of the condition of consciousness of people today. Now, hopefully it may change, but so far as we know, we don't know exactly how it will happen. But I think it's a very good thing for astrologers to, and when they study astrology, it's a very good thing to stress the fact that those are actual things that happened, that astrology was born of that experience of the order of the universe, and that if it is called the mother of all science, it's because all science are merely application of that principle of order, of the belief in the fact that the universe is a universe of order.
This is the end of Transpersonal Astrology Part 2 by Dane Rudjar. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudjar Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudjar Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudjar at www.rudjarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudjar, visit www.rudjaraudioarchives.com.